All right, time once again for the movie retrospective. Doing a really underappreciated one on this show. This is Exorcist 3.
I can't believe I'd never seen this movie.
Otherwise known as Legion. I can't believe it either.
Nope. Man, I loved Exorcist 1. And then I saw Exorcist 2. I just kind of laughed at it. You know, it's kind of goofy.
Exorcist 2 is pretty universally reviled, I think.
It's just goofy.
It was so, just super dumb.
I just totally ignored all the other Exorcists after that. But this was a good one, man. This is by the same director, right? Same writer as the first one?
Yeah, not the same director, because William Friedkin didn't do it, but the same guy that wrote, William Peter Blatty, who wrote the original novel. He also wrote this novel, and he directed it.
The tone and everything is just like the first one.
This is very similar. Yeah.
There should be no Exorcist 2. There should only be Exorcist 1 and 3.
This movie acted like there was no. It made no reference at all to Exorcist 2.
I can't believe I didn't see this one.
Pretended it didn't exist.
This is a fucking great movie. I mean, it's a great movie.
It's very good. It really is very good.
George C. Scott?
Yeah.
Damn. If you're going to put Scott in a movie, that fucker's going to act.
He definitely does.
He just chewed that fucking scenery, man. He acted through the whole thing. Everybody was acting.
Yeah.
Everybody was acting. They were acting. Okay? They were serious about it.
Acting.
Yeah, they were acting. Now, they were, you know, but I liked it. The fucking tone was perfect. It was a great response to the first one. This should have never been called Exorcist 3. It should have been called Legion.
Well, yeah.
Like the original one.
That's, okay. Well, what ended up happening, this movie came out in 1990. Like I said, after Exorcist 2, The Heretic came out, which did have Linda Blair and stuff like that in it. Pretty universally panned, you know, it did really shitty at the box office and everything. So I feel like William Peter Blatty, who wrote the original novel, he was not particularly interested in doing a sequel to The Exorcist. But then he kind of got the idea of doing, he's like, well, why don't I do a book that's like, it's sort of like tangential to the story of The Exorcist.
Yeah,
it kind of like focuses on Lieutenant Kinderman, who was kind of a minor character in the first one. And he's like, I almost wanted to do it more like a police procedural or like a serial killer type story.
Yeah.
Just with these characters in it that's only sort of marginally related to the original.
It's the same universe. And if you saw Exorcist 1, you will know exactly who it is they're talking about. That priest comes back. What was his name? Father...
Karras. Damien Karras.
Yeah, Father Damien Karras. He's in it. It's the same actor. All kinds of shit. It's about possession, but, you know, in some ways, kind of reminds me of the same storyline as The Frighteners, where a serial killer's coming back and possessing people. Well, he didn't really possess people. Wait, did he? Yeah, no.
Well, I guess you
His
could
ghosts
call
were
it
killing
that.
People. Yeah, it's a good movie. It is a possession movie, but instead of a demon, it's like a serial killer who's, I guess he's kind of been promoted to demon.
Yeah, because he was executed.
Yeah.
The Gemini Killer is the name. He's played by Brad Dourif.
It's kind of like the
Zodiac.
Also
amazing in this.
Yeah, he's
probably
like,
Brad Dourif's best role, I think.
Yeah, he's kind of like the Zodiac.
Yeah, he's based on the Zodiac.
And he can jump in and out of people's bodies.
Yeah.
Especially if there's something mentally wrong with them. Leaves them open to possession. And then it turns out one of the guys that he possesses is Father Karras.
Yeah.
But I don't want to spoil everything about it because I don't think this is a very well-appreciated movie in modern times. I don't think a lot of people have seen it.
Yeah, and like I said...
It's almost like a brand new movie. And Shudder's showing it.
Yeah, it's on Shudder.
And I think...
It might be on Tubi, too.
It's on YouTube. If you subscribe to YouTube, it's in... Which, you know, I have that YouTube Plus type
deal.
It's in one of the free movies of this month.
Yeah, okay.
And it's Blu-ray quality. It looks great. I think the movie came out, what, 1990?
1990.
Yeah, but it looks awesome.
Yeah.
It looks really good. And the just the score, the music, the sound effects, the special effects that they used, it's practical effects, but it's just really classy. It's just like the first one. It's just like Exorcist.
Pretty much. Like I said, even though it's less... demonic possession is a factor, but it's less about demonic possession as it is about the serial killer and this and the cop who was investigating it, kind of like his whole, I guess it's like him coming to terms with how shitty the universe is,
and he's a cop, he's got real hard, you know, George C. Scott, this motherfucker's just hard-boiled as fuck, okay?
Mm-hmm. He's very angry.
Yeah, but he's intelligent, you know, and he's running across paranormal shit, super paranormal stuff. And it's just a cool flick. You got to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what ended up happening, like I said, William Peter Blatty, he kind of got this idea. He's like, well, I'm going to take Lieutenant Kinderman, who was actually played by Lee J. Cobb in the original movie. But obviously he had to be played by George C. Scott in this one because Lee J. Cobb died only 3 years after the original Exorcist came out. So some of the characters from the first movie are in this, but are played by different actors for whatever reason, because the original actor died or wasn't available or whatever. So I guess that William Peter Blatty had written a screenplay called Legion, and that he couldn't really get any interest in it at the time. So he turned it into a novel, which came out in 1983 and was like a huge bestseller. So then he was approached by, you know, the movie production company. It's like, well, why don't we make it into a movie? And he's like, fine. So he readapted it back into a screenplay, but the studio insisted on calling it Exorcist 3, even though Exorcist 2 had tanked and made the whole Exorcist thing like into a joke, pretty much. So he was like, please don't call it that. It's like, you don't want the relation. It's like, yes, it's in the same universe, but basically it's a standalone movie. You don't really need to have seen the first one to appreciate this one, although it gives it more resonance because you know who the characters are.
I would have called it something like Legion. Something or other, The Exorcist. Something like that.
Yeah,
something
he said, like if you must call it Exorcist, he's like, why don't you just call it Exorcist Legion or something like that. He's like, just please do not call it Exorcist 3.
Yeah.
However,
that's what they did.
They went ahead and called it Exorcist 3.
It tanked this movie.
And it did moderately well.
But I didn't see it.
It wasn't doing as well. It didn't do as well as they expected. And he's, you know, William Peter Blatty thought it was so funny because he's like, they came back to me and then they're like, hey, the movie didn't do as well as we expected. Must be because of Exorcist 2. And he's like, duh, that's why I told you not to call it Exorcist 3.
Yeah, don't call it Exorcist 3, dumbasses.
But the thing about it, though, okay, now, it's amazing to me that this movie works as well as it does, considering that a lot of the shit that's in it, like in the final theatrical version, was not supposed to be in there. Father Karras's character, played by Jason Miller, was originally not supposed to be in the movie. Because when they were first thinking about doing the movie, he wasn't available for whatever reason, either because he was working on something else or whatever the reason was. So he wasn't going to be in the movie. But then later on, he became available and the studio said, oh, well, you should put him in like to tie him in like the first movie. So they had to do like all these rewrites and shit like that. Another thing the studio said was that, well, this is called Exorcist 3 because we decided that that's what it was going to be called. And there's no exorcism in it because originally that wasn't going to happen. Like it had a totally different ending. So then they had to write in an exorcism. They had to write in an exorcist character, Father Mourning, who's played by Nicol Williamson, who was in Excalibur, actually. He played Merlin.
Yeah.
That's the same guy.
So, I didn't even recognize him.
Yeah, he looks completely different in this because he has, like, blonde hair and everything. So it's interesting. So if you know that, like, when you watch the movie, it makes sense. But it makes sense if you don't know that, but you really, really, really have to pay attention to every line of dialogue, everything that's going on.
I didn't know that stuff was grafted in there. It didn't really matter. The final product I thought was really cool.
I did too.
Good job. And it's not like what they're doing with the modern horror movies where it's like a scare a second and it's like, you know, over the top. It's not like that. It's kind of like a 70s movie in a certain way, but ramped up. Almost kind of like Changeling. It kind of reminded me of Changeling in a certain way. There is a bunch of paranormal stuff happening, but it sets a mood first. And that's a lot of problems with some of the newer horror movies that I've seen. They don't really establish a mood or a tone as a baseline to launch the horror from.
Yeah.
And it doesn't ramp up slowly enough. And this one, it kind of does. I just liked it.
The cool thing about this movie, one of the coolest things, is that, and I saw another reviewer like point this out.
It gets more and more intense.
They said that you can tell that a writer directed this because William Friedkin, who directed the first movie, he was originally supposed to direct this one as well, but then him and William Peter Blatty kind of had a falling out. William Peter Blatty actually wanted John Carpenter to direct this.
Oh, he would have fucked it up.
But then maybe.
Yeah, I like Carpenter, but this is not his
kind of movie. Not really his kind of material.
No.
But then they kind of, but John Carpenter was kind of like, well, you seem like you want to direct this, William Peter Blatty, the novelist. And he's like, you're right, I think I will direct it myself. So he did. Now, I think that the only, I think the only other movie that William Peter Blatty ever directed was The Ninth Configuration, which you can see the parallels between, there's a lot of the same actors are in it too. You know, Scott Wilson and shit like that was in it, but what?
Well, I was going to say the difference between this kind of movie and a new horror movie is when you watch a new horror movie, it's kind of like a ride at Disneyland, kind of like that damn haunted house. You know it's not real. You know the story is not real. You know that the people telling you the story know that you know that it isn't real. It's just kind of like an entertainment thing. This one's weird. It has the tone of something that's realistic.
Yeah.
And it slowly starts ramping it up. And it shows, kind of shows you what a ghost can do. If a ghost can possess somebody, can it possess you? Or can it alter your senses and your view? It's weird, you know what I mean? People having visions. Yeah, just, I liked it.
Yeah.
They show you the hallucinations.
But it's very grounded in reality.
But it's,
like, yeah, they don't do like dream sequency kind of shit. It's not like soft focus or anything.
And then the score behind it accentuates it, like, you know, George C. Scott seeing horrible shit, and then boom, it's gone. And he's like, whoa, where'd it go? Nothing happened. You know what I mean? It wasn't physical, it was an attack on the mind. You know, I mean, just the way they portrayed that, I thought was pretty cool.
Another one of the cool things about this, one thing, the score is very, very subtle. It's not like, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like that. It's very, a lot of times there's no music at all, and I think that makes it creepier. Another thing that's really interesting about this, the editing is really weird and, like, keeps you, like, unsettled. Because sometimes there'll be, like, two characters and they'll be having a conversation. There's, like, a hard cut.
Yeah, and it's so, like, see something
and it's,
else.
Like, really... And it just keeps you on edge throughout the whole movie. Because he did that on purpose.
There's a couple scenes, I think it's at least one scene, where somebody crawls across a ceiling. And you're not sure if that's something that happened in reality or if they're fucking with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that one woman crawled across the ceiling. And there's a lot of people in that
room.
And
no one noticed
And no one noticed it. What... Did that really happen, or is the movie playing with your mind?
Although it just occurred to me that if someone was crawling across the ceiling right now, I probably wouldn't notice it either because I can't see the ceiling
at
the
weird.
Moment.
Yeah.
So just you both look up.
You know, maybe they're just kind of artistically trying to, you know, kind of express another concept, another idea, like maybe astral projection or something. You know, maybe the person's spirit was on the, or it's a hallucination. You don't know.
Yeah. You well, know? Like I said, and another interesting thing about this too, I mean, other than the time that they take to build up all the stuff, and you really do actually care about, I mean, because George C. Scott is like the main character and you really kind of like feel his journey and he's so tired and pissed off and, you know, he's just going through all this anger and grief and shit like that with all this stuff that's going on in the town with all these murders. And, you know, he's just over it. And, you know, him and the friendship with Father Dyer and stuff like that, which they did a little bit in the original, like I said, with different actors, these same characters. But another thing they do, which I think is a really interesting choice that makes this creepier, in my opinion, and this is something that I've found with like a lot of movies that I think are creepy, sometimes not showing stuff is scarier than showing stuff. They do not show anything in this movie, pretty much. It's like, you know what I mean, there'll be like a dead body, like for example, like in the opening scene where there's been a little boy, like a 12-year-old boy, and he's been murdered, like in a really horrible way. All they show George C. Scott lifting up the sheet and looking and being like, oh man, fuck. And then later he describes
You know what happened
to the kid.
And it's worse, the description is worse,
because you can imagine it,
right? You don't act, a lot of people get murdered in gruesome ways, but they never show it. You don't see it.
But
they talk about it.
You just see, like, the aftermath type of thing. Like, when one of the characters gets killed and, like, all his blood is drained out and put in these little jars and shit, it's like they just show
the
body under the sheet and the jars, and then the cop very creepily, like, tells exactly, like, what happened to the guy.
Right.
And in a way, that's, like, way creepier to me. Because you're picturing it in your head rather than seeing it in front of you.
And if you had seen, say, a prosthetic dummy...
yeah,
of the victim.
It would have taken away.
It would have taken the impact away. It's better just to not see it. They just had it covered with the damn crime scene cloth or with a
yeah, with like a sheet or whatever. A
sheet on it.
Yeah, you didn't see anything.
Better just to imagine.
And all you saw was like George C. Scott's reaction. Like, you know, his friend, like his best friend, yeah, gets murdered. And it's like he just comes in, he just lifts up the sheet, yeah, and you could just see his face like... Oh.
There's weird dream sequences, man, where George C. Scott has a vision where he's in heaven and all the victims are there with fucking their heads sewn back on.
Sewn back on, yeah.
And they're up there with the angels and the angels are saying thing. It's and it's like in a damn central... It's in a hospital or a cross between a hospital
and Grand and Central train station, it looked like. Yeah, all at the same time. Because it had like that clock like in Grand Central Station.
Yeah, it was creepy. Like, kind of like a real dream. And he's talking to him in a dream like
state. Sorry you got murdered.
Yeah, sorry you got murdered. You know, that kind of... And it's just
like, just weird, in a really nice, yeah, kind of,
yeah,
way.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a great flick. It's weird. It makes a lot of sense. It has some fantastic acting in it. They act the shit out of this movie.
Particularly, the scenes between... I mean, I haven't even got into... Like, the plot is a little bit complicated,
I'd like to see it again.
You know, George C. Scott, who plays Kinderman, this is basically set, I think it's either 15 years or 17 years, I can't remember, after the events of the original Exorcist. Now, there's been a serial killer... There was a serial killer called the Gemini... who was executed for a series of crimes like 15 years before. However, there has been a new series of murders that seem very much like the Gemini killings, and even like to details that weren't released to the public, so there was no way that somebody could be copycatting, because they released like fake details to the press and whatever, like to screen out, you know, cranks and whatnot. So it turns out that... analogous to when these murders started occurring again, like with the little boy and like all these beheadings and like all this really weird shit, there also was this guy who had wandered into like the hospital or whatever, and he couldn't remember anything, and he was comatose for 15 years, but suddenly woke up when all these murders started going on. Now, when George C. Scott's Kinderman character goes to visit him, he discovers that it's Father Karras.
Yeah.
Who died.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, who died at the end of the first movie. So then, like, this whole thing, you know, transpires that, like, the demon from the first movie is, like, possessing and, like, he wants to bring the Gemini killer back and all this other kind of stuff. So,
yeah, some creepy shit with that.
It's like, yeah, so it's all this kind of stuff. So there is possession in it, but I would call it more... It's kind of hard to classify. It's more like a police procedural, but it's got a lot of supernatural and religious elements to it.
It's not quite as dry as kind of an average police procedural of the 70s when those movies were big. It's better. Well, actually, there was a lot of police procedural type horror movies in the 90s too.
That's true, yeah. There was a lot of kind of serial, like
Seven and all that, right?
This reminds me very much of Seven.
Yeah.
I feel
that was a pretty good one.
I feel like Seven probably took a lot from this, because I just watched Seven again recently, and it did occur to me how similar these two movies, even though Seven doesn't have a supernatural element, but I don't know, just the way it progresses, the way the story progresses reminded me.
Seven
kind of
was
like
a little
this.
More colorful, I think.
And the score was a lot more over the top and stuff. This one is very, like I said, this is very creepy.
More sterile, but it's that makes it creepy. And then
I mean, there'll be like...
It's the same tone as Exorcist 1.
Yeah.
It's that same tone. So,
like, if you watch them both together, it seems like... Because, I mean, there'll be, like, great scenes where, like, you know, Kinderman is in the office, like, talking to the priest or whatever, and they're just talking. There's no score. There's no nothing.
Yeah, there's
actually... All that's in the background is, like, a clock ticking, and all of a sudden the clock stops.
Yeah.
And then they just turn toward it. And then all of a sudden, like, a door creaks open.
Yeah.
And, like, a paper blows.
There's
and
a lot
shit
of
like
use
that.
Of silence, which you don't
see
that a lot.
Yeah, it's really, really creepy. And it's just, like, there's just such great fucking scenes in this. I mean, the whole... shit at the end with the woman that escapes from the thing and like dresses like a nurse and like goes to the house and that's all super creepy, like with her just sitting in the cab like going to the thing and all this other stuff. And we have to talk too about the very, very famous, which is probably the most famous thing about this movie, and which some people have called the best jump scare in horror movie history, which is the scene in that long scene of the hallway with the thing coming out with like the white thing over it with like the big
Don't ruin it, don't ruin it.
No, I'm just saying, well, a lot of people have seen that, even the ones that haven't
seen
the movie.
They know what we're talking about. Yeah.
But one thing that's really cool about that scene is the way you would never, well, I don't want to say like nowadays they would never do a scene like that, because like I said, there's a lot more art house horror and stuff like that. But the way that scene is set up is genius. It goes on for like 10 minutes. You know what I mean? It's like, and it's just this long, like a long shot. And yeah. you feel like nothing's going to happen. Like, what the fuck is going on? Why are yeah. we at the end of this hallway and, like, all these people are dicking around down there yeah. and, like, in the hospital and everything? And then, you know, oh, there's a noise and the nurse comes in there and then there's a fake jump scare and there's, like, all this other... And then it's, like, just goes on and on yeah. and on. And you're like, nothing's going to happen, man. And then, bam! And it's, like, it's so, so effective.
Yeah. It's weird.
And I'm not usually, like, a big jump scare type of person, but that one was, like, really, really masterfully weird. Done. But this is, you know, like I said, this, I think it's for free on Tubi, and you said it's, like, for free on YouTube.
It looked like it was on free for YouTube. You could check, but I think it's because I subscribe.
Yeah, it's also on Shudder.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, there's, very famously, there's a director's cut of this, because after all the studio interference, I guess, we're just like, oh, we have to put Jason Miller in it, oh, we have to put an exorcism in it, which was kind of like the big set piece at the end, like this big exorcism, which wasn't in the original script. And I guess William Peter Blatty was kind of like pissed off about it. And even Brad Dourif, who was in the movie, who plays Gemini, he didn't really like how the movie came out because he's like, you know, that's not anything like what the original vision of the movie was. But, you know, a lot of the footage got lost over the years. What Shout Factory ended up doing, I think, when they put out the Blu-ray fairly recently...
Oh, they got... I mean, I wouldn't mind buying it.
...was they were able to find... They said we couldn't find anything, like, quality, like, of the first, you know, cut of the film. Because they cut the film together, and then the production company said... Hey, we need an exorcism. Hey, we need to put Jason Miller in it. So William Peter Blatty had to go back and... insert a bunch of shit, you know what I mean, like yeah. after it was already done.
So Shout Factory has both versions of it on their
they board? Have both versions, but the problem is, like I said, a lot of the footage that was shot that was cut out, like to put the new shit in
yeah.
was lost. But they did find like old videotapes of like the dailies, so they did kind of cobble it back together, they right. said, from the best available sources. So some of it's not that great, but I should say that I saw the original ending, like that William P. that was in the script and everything like that. And I hate to say it, but I think the studio ending was yeah. better.
Most people say the theatrical version is better.
Is better. Yeah. You know, I can see what.
Because it's more movie like. It's like what you expect yeah. out of a movie. And I think the director's version of it is more like something from a book.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the director's cut, even, I mean, the theatrical cut is very similar to the book, but I mean, the director's cut was almost exactly like the book, and it ended like the book, which that's fine. You know, in the book, that ending was perfectly fine, but I do feel like...
Theater's different.
Yeah, I feel like the ending, the director's cut ending was a little anticlimactic.
Yeah, this ends in a big grand finale, big paranormal grand finale, and that's where it should have ended, if
yeah.
you ask me.
So in a way, I think, like, even though, yes, the studio's meddled, and yes, he had to go, and he was pissed off, and he had to go back and add this other stuff.
Had a satisfying ending.
It did actually have, yeah. like, build up to yeah. a satisfying ending, so I think they were right about that. And even though, like I said, Jason Miller, who played Damian Karras, he wasn't in the original cut of the film. They put him in later, like after he became available. So they had to like write him in. And so him and Brad Dourif are like changing out. But in a way, I kind of like that.
Yeah.
Because you're seeing him as like a different, because he's like a daemon. Like he's got like a bunch of different faces. And
yeah, he assumes different faces. And I didn't know that was something that was added later. It made perfect sense when I watched it.
Yeah, it's like if you didn't
find
know
out until
that.
We didn't find out until later that was cobbled together. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah, you would never know that.
Yeah, you see Father Damien there. And then he gets possessed, and then you see the other guy talking, the killer.
You see the Gemini.
Right. And that's perfectly fine for a movie like this.
And like I said, that's what I mean. It's like the whole premise is that he's possessed by a demon.
Right. And that dude acted his ass off, too. What's his name again?
Brad Dourif.
Brad Dourif.
He's the guy. He did Child's Play.
Yeah.
He's the voice of Chucky.
He was in Dune. He played one of the Mentats in Dune.
He's been shit
tons of stuff. Yeah, no, I like
I love
that
Brad
guy.
Dourif. And
yeah,
it's
he does a great job. I mean, he looks fucking insane in this.
Nobody plays crazy like Brad Dourif.
Yeah.
He's really, and it's like, it makes me sad that, I mean, because the scenes with him and George C. Scott in the cell, because there's like a lot of really long scenes that are almost like a stage play where it's just like the two of them like talking and stuff and like they have these big long conversations and he has these really long creepy rants where he's like talking about all the shit that he did to the victims
crazy
and stuff.
Ass eyes and shit
and it's just he's so fucking great in this and it's just it makes me sad that he didn't get some kind of award or something like that. It also kind of makes me sad that he wished that they had kept the director's cut.
They should have fucking kept that name Legion. It would have been a great standalone. And everyone who would have went to go see this movie would know that this is Exorcist.
Yeah,
they would know. You don't have to announce it.
That's what I mean. I figure out, like, I guess nowadays they're not so weird about that. Yeah. Like, because they'll call a movie like something else and then everyone will just find out that that's a sequel. They should have done that. I agree with William Peter Blatty. Yeah. I don't think that.
The acting in it's great.
I mean, this really is
like
fantastic.
Academy Award winning acting. I mean,
some of the best shit about this too, and one of the most surprising things, particularly, George C. Scott's character, Kinderman's interactions with Father Dyer, like his best friend, like they're movie buddies and they hang out. They've been friends a long time. Like the dialogue between them is so fucking great. Like it's really funny. This is like a weirdly funny movie.
Yeah. Now let's kind of put this into context. This is a really good movie. I think this technically is better than Exorcist 1.
You would not be the first person to say that.
Yeah, I think it is. Although, The Exorcist is a fucking masterpiece, and it's it sets a tone that's hard to beat.
Yeah.
But you could watch those two movies back to back, and you just go, yeah, this is the fucking Exorcist. This shit's fucking badass.
Yeah.
You know, this is a good movie.
And
it's just... Is it better than The Exorcist? Yeah, I think probably technically it is.
It depends on what, because I
but it is not a 70s movie. It's not that 70s classic movie. It comes real... Oh, man. Is it better?
I was watching a review today by a guy, and he liked this one better than the original Exorcist. I don't know if I would say that.
It's hard to beat The Exorcist.
It is.
Like,
and
it's like saying... Everybody loves the fucking The Shining.
Yeah.
Dr. Sleep was pretty damn good, too.
Yeah.
Technically, I'd probably say it might be a little bit better movie, but that Kubrick is really hard to beat.
Yeah.
The tone that he sets, that, you know what I mean? He's making an original there.
Yeah.
I think it might be a situation like that.
It is, kind of, because I feel like... You know, and I know this is kind of a cop-out, but it's kind of, like, hard to say because... And in a way, you have to really admire... I mean, yes, we'll forget that Exorcist II, The Heretic, existed because I think everybody and their mother thinks that movie was terrible.
That's just horrible.
But I just love that they were like, okay, well, we're going to make a sequel. You know, William Peter Blatty was like, we're going to make a sequel. We're just going to pretend that piece of shit didn't exist. I'm just going to make a direct sequel that happens, like, 15, 17 years later. And it's like, he didn't do... It's not... It's a horror movie, kind of... But it's more like a psychological thriller type of thing. And it's like he just kind of took that universe and went a completely different direction with it, which I thought was kind of cool, with some nods to the original one. Like I said, it's the same universe. There's demons and stuff.
This is one of the best satanic movies.
Yeah.
We're talking about it's up there with Exorcist, Omen.
Yeah.
Omen 1, this one. And then you got Omen, you know, 2 and 3. You know, it's in those rounds. And then, like, man, I almost said Amityville Horror, but revisiting Amityville Horror, that was pretty bad.
It's not as good as I remember.
Not as good as I remember.
I still like it, but it's not as good as
there were certain episodes of
that
The Haunting.
That scared the shit out of me.
There
when
are
I was
certain
a kid.
Episodes of The Haunting that are better than fucking The Exorcist. than Amityville Horror. Although I liked the acting in Amityville Horror, it had a good tone. But this is right there with them.
And like I said, this
and
one is
up
just...
towards the top of that pile that I just described. You know what I mean?
This is
Shining, I'll put that in there. That's not really a satanic movie, but yeah, this is a strong movie. I'm very surprised.
It's just like, it's really cool because like I said, you can tell that a writer directed this. It's filmic, but it's also literary. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's really hard to explain, and if you've seen his other movie, The Ninth Configuration, you'll know what I'm talking about. It's kind of like genreless, because the Ninth Configuration was like that too.
I haven't seen that one.
It, you know, where it's just like, it's a weird, and you're, if somebody said, what genre is this or what's it about, it's like kind of hard to pin it down. Also, like I said, the way that the shots are composed, the blocking, the editing, it's like just very strange, but in a way that really kind of contributes to the overall atmosphere of the movie. I mean, the way that Exorcist III is edited, it just keeps you, it makes you nervous, like, the whole time, because you're not entirely sure.
You don't know what's going on, because you've seen Exorcist I, so that's part. That's another thing. Exorcist I is a different story.
Yeah.
This is related to that story, but it is a very different story. If Exorcist I is better, part of it is because of the nature of the story that it's telling. But in terms of quality and direction and acting and everything, man.
That's what I mean.
This might be better.
It's so creepy.
It's real close.
It's really creepy. Yeah. Like, the whole atmosphere of it, it's just really unsettling.
Had I known, I'd have watched it a long time ago. I got to get on Blu-ray Exorcist.
Yeah,
and this one on Blu-ray. I want to get that. I want to get that Shout Factory.
I'm kind of curious to see the director's cut. Like I said, I've seen the end, like how it ended in the director's cut. And honestly, I think the theatrical cut is a much better ending. Like, it's a lot more satisfying, I guess, because it was kind of like a bigger splash. Because, you know, it's like, I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, I need a big explosions or anything like that. Not that that's
when you
what
go into this. Don't think of Exorcist One. This is a movie more like Seven. It's a police movie.
Yeah.
But if you liked Exorcist One, it's all going to start coming back to you.
And like you said, it has like a lot of similarities with Exorcist One in the pacing and the tone and things like that. Because Exorcist One was pretty slow moving.
Yeah,
also.
And the audio and the visual effects, those creepy fucking sound effects that, you know, and the flashes and shit and the edits, it was weird.
Yeah, and like just like Exorcist
One didn't
use a lot of jump scares or anything like that. Maybe had one or something like that. This one, same type of thing. It has one, but it's a fucking doozy. Other than that, it just used like really unsettling imagery. It let you use your imagination to come up with shit, because like I said, there'd just be somebody like describing something.
It does end with an exorcism. It's a different nature of exorcism. Like, you don't see, you know what I mean? From Exorcist One, those are iconic scenes. I think they made the correct decision of not trying to copy that.
Yeah.
They did it in a different way. It was more about visions.
Yeah.
That had a lot to do with it. And mind control.
Yeah.
Which, that was the way to go. And it had a real satisfying ending. That's all I'm going to say about this movie. This
you
is
know
a
what
good
the
movie.
Weird, I forgot to mention when you said about visions and it reminded me. There's a lot of like really weird cameos in this.
Yeah.
In the vision thing, like in heaven and stuff, there's Fabio.
Yeah.
Also, Samuel L. Jackson was in there.
Yeah.
Although he was hard to tell who he was because they just showed him quick and they dubbed his voiceover.
Fabio playing to Angel and he pulled that shit off too.
He did, like with his
he
face
did, like,
and
an
everything.
Angel and he had fucking,
Also, C. Everett Koop, who was the Surgeon General, he was in the shit. Larry King was in there, like in a restaurant or
That's
something.
Right. I forgot about
and
that.
Shit like that. So it's like really
it's
weird. Like,
it's
that
an
all-star
cast. It's a great cast.
All these fucking people
this was should have been a blockbuster movie.
It should have been.
Had they fucking called it Legion, it would have been. It would have been.
Well, because like I said, the
although it
book,
came in 1990, people were getting kind of used to this genre. Because in the 70s, Exorcist One was groundbreaking and very obscene.
It was very
time.
Shocking for the
for
time.
The time, yeah.
I mean, even still, that crucifix masturbation scene, I mean, that's still a little bit, a little bit. And then sticking her mom's face
but
in
you, but you kind of see that kind of shit nowadays
you
in
do,
a horror
yeah.
movie. In those days.
Can you imagine seeing that in 1973?
Yeah, in 73, in an expensive, well-made movie with Max von Sydow in it and, like, you know, real Hollywood names. They kicked ass on that movie. That movie caused the Satanic Panic, if you ask me.
Well, it was one of them. That and Rosemary's Baby
that one
probably
Rosemary
coming
Baby.
Out like within a few years of each other.
Because all of a sudden people said, oh, shit, that's possible.
Yeah.
You know?
But like you said, the sad thing about it is that the novel that this movie was based on was called Legion. And it was a best-selling novel. So why didn't they just say, well, it's an adaptation of that? Oh, and by the way, it's also You know, it's kind of a sequel to The Exorcist. Like I said, yeah, it's a sequel in the sense it happens after.
Shout Factory should have re-released it, cleaned it up, given it a different poster, and called it Legion.
Yeah.
And then in the fine print.
Well, some people just call it that anyway.
And then in the fine print called it.
That's what it was supposed to be called. Yeah, if you see, like, all the shit, like, even I've seen, like, screenshots from the director's cut. That's what it was called. It was just called Legion.
It's called Legion, you know, not spoiler alert. It's called Legion because when this killer comes back as a ghost and he's possessing people, he's making references to all kinds of other demonic forces and people that are helping him.
Yeah.
And the existence, you know, the hierarchy behind him and stuff. There is a legion of them.
Yeah. Well, it comes right out of the Bible.
Right out of the Bible.
Like, where,
right out of the
know,
Bible.
Where Jesus asked so the guy, what's like,
yeah, it's not,
you know, what's your name? I am Legion.
Yeah,
you know.
It's not a lone soul, kind of like it was in Frighteners.
Yeah.
You know, it's... He's a representative of a fucking greater army.
Yeah.
It's wild. It's wild.
Yeah. Like I said, this is definitely one, it's like a really creepy, unsettling kind of movie. And it's one that you really need to pay attention to, like, all the dialogue and stuff. Like, cause
it's old school.
The story's kind of complicated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like I said, it's
an old school
psychological
thriller.
But if you pay attention, like, you know, you'll kind of get all the gist. And it has, like, some really, really great, like, creepy imagery.
I
want to
see it again.
Yeah, we won't watch it again if you want to.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
I
want to
see
it
again.
I feel like it's a little underappreciated. Yeah. So if you haven't seen it, you definitely should. And it's all over the place. Very easy to get hold of.
They're showing it for free right now.
Yep, Exorcist 3, otherwise known as Legion. So go check it out.